Good afternoon. Welcome back, everyone. It's good to see you all. This is Monday, February 19th, 2024, and I call the meeting of the Veterans and Military Affairs Finance and Policy Committee to order. We do have a quorum. Vice Chair Elkins, have you had a chance to review the minutes of the last meeting?
Yes, and I'll move their approval.
Okay. Vice Chair Elkins moves the approval of the minutes for March 27th, 2023. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all of those in favor say aye.
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 Are those opposed? Good. The motion prevails, and the minutes for March 27th are approved. Representative Bliss, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Representative Bliss. We have some new staff members, and I would like to have them introduce themselves. Colby Sullivan is filling in for Jeff Diebel this session, and if you would, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Colby Sullivan with the Nonpartisan House Research Department, filling in for my colleague Jeff Diebel while he's away on military leave.
Okay, and we have Sean Haydorn, who's DFL Research. If you'd introduce yourself, Sean.
Hi, I'm Sean. I was on Veterans in 2019 and 20, and I'm glad to be back.
Good. And then Jack, who is now our committee administrator, Jack Dockendorf.
Hi, members. Jack Dockendorf. I was a CLA the last couple of years and will be the CA for Veterans this year. Looking forward to it.
Good. Looking forward to working with all of you. Our agenda for today is to hear the presentation of the Department of Military Affairs on their priorities for this session, and we'll be hearing some of their bills today as well, as well as a bill from Vice Chair Elkins. We'll start off the presentation with the Brigadier General Chris Bloomquist, who's the Deputy Adjutant General. And with Mr. Bloomquist is Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. And Nick Slade, you'll be coming up later if you want to pull up a chair there, no, Mr. Slade. He's Deputy Counsel to the Department of Military Affairs. General, if you would introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony, please.
All right, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the House Committee. My name is Brigadier General Chris Blomquist, Deputy Adjutant General, for the record. And with me here today, I have Mr. Don Kerr, Executive Director, Department of Military Affairs, Lieutenant Colonel Eric Athman, Operations Director, DMA, and Mr. Nick Slade, Deputy Counsel, DMA. I want to start by thanking you for the opportunity to provide an update of our activities from the Department of Military Affairs. Slide. Here is our overview and the agenda that we'll be presenting to you this afternoon. If you can read that, I think you probably have some handouts in front of you as well. And we'll provide time for questions at the end, but we'll certainly take any throughout as we go forward. Slide. All right, here is a photo of one of your Minnesota Air National Guard F-16s at a gathering at Edwards Air Force Base commemorating the 50th anniversary of the F-16's first flight in 1974. You will note that this F-16 is painted with a special 75th anniversary design that the 148th Fighter Wing out of Duluth, Minnesota painted this last fall. In September, they celebrated their 75-year anniversary of being a unit up in Duluth and have been flying fighters since their inception on what was a dirt strip in Duluth in 1948, flying P-51 Mustangs. Arguably the best unit in the world with a track record to prove it, flying fighters. And in addition to worldwide deployments, these bulldogs, as they call themselves, are currently providing air defense of North America, sitting 24/7 alert. This means that they're protecting the skies over North America and our own critical infrastructure here in Minnesota. And now more than ever, as you know, our homeland is at risk, and this unit is critical to our safety at home and national interest abroad. So we'll discuss a little bit more of them in the future and going forward in some of these slides. And you can see I'm sitting here in a blue uniform today, so I'm an Air Guardsman. Look a little bit different from a lot of the Army folks you probably see. I came from that wing, came from the 148th Fighter Wing, where I most recently served as the wing commander. Thank you, Representative Lillegard, for the shout-out back there. I flew F-16s up there for 25 years, and, you know, that was prior to 9/11. So prior to 9/11, we spent a lot of time doing counter-drug operations in the Caribbean, South and Central America, and oddly, we also had an alert detachment down at Tyndall Air Force Base looking more at the Cuba threat when 9/11 happened, and were one of two units in the entire United States that was armed with a live ordnance that could have done anything about it. So we've come a long way since then. As we've transitioned after 9/11, we jumped into Homeland Defense and did a lot of alert from coast to coast, including Alaska and Hawaii. And then we transitioned more to a strategic reserve. As you all know, we're not really a strategic reserve as much as an operational force now that's being used for our national defense strategy on a daily basis. So my combat deployments include three times to OIF in Iraq and then once to Afghanistan for Operation Enduring Freedom as the commander over there. And just a little more background on me, I've been working here in St. Paul for the last year and a half for Major General Sean Mankey, who regrets not being able to be here today, but he's at Capstone, which is a great course for him, and he's currently in the PACOM AOR for the next few weeks. So in this role, I represent the Minnesota Air National Guard, which consists of the 133rd Airlift Wing here in the Twin Cities and the 148th Fighter Wing in Duluth, where we have about 2,200 airmen. And then I'm also assigned a dual hat role by the National Guard Bureau, where I'm the ANGI assistant to the 11th Air Force Commander up in Anchorage, Alaska. And that is a three-star, three-hat command, which represents all of the geography from Alaska to Hawaii and Guam. So everything in the Pacific that's not Japan or South Korea. And also in this role operationally, I serve as the deputy CFAC, which is the Combined Forces Air Component Commander for the Alaska NORAD region. So I do have a Title 10 job as well, which is kind of my part-time job. So up there, essentially providing command and control of the skies in and around Alaska. And over the last year, it's been pretty exciting with the balloons going over Alaska, the UAPs, the Russian aviation, and the combined Chinese and Russia military flotilla that was going through the Aleutian Islands just this past summer. So one of those UAPs actually flew over the city, and I watched that happen, and your 148th Fighter Wing ended up shooting it down a little bit to the west of here. So that's a little bit about me and where I come from. So slide. All right, the One Minnesota budget, you can take a look at the pictures and read the bullets up there, hopefully, but I'll summarize. And essentially, the programs authorized by the legislature allow military affairs to better retain, care for, and protect their service members. So these programs are critical items that help us compete for the best talent that we can find and to retain our soldiers and airmen here in the state of Minnesota. And maintaining a full roster is critically important to mission accomplishment, but increasingly more important to maintaining a federal mission and federal funding. We've continued to receive overwhelming federal support to include the announcement of the C-130Js for our Minneapolis unit, the 133rd, and this success is in no small part due to successfully maintaining over 100% end strength. Recruiting, retention, and propensity to serve are opportunities where you can truly help us be successful in the military here in Minnesota. So detailed upgrades of these programs will be provided in future slides. The picture on the left shows the 34th Infantry Division at their mobilization ceremony a few short weeks ago. And the picture on the right shows Major General Sean Mankey and Brigadier General Gabrielli with Senators Amy Klobuchar and Tina Smith after the C-130J announcement for the Minnesota Air National Guard. Slide. Next. All right, up here you can see the 34th ID headquarters element, and what they are doing is they are deploying. They're currently in training right now, but they will deploy to provide command and control for Army forces in the CENTCOM area of responsibility. So they'll be deployed all over the region, but the specific bases are classified. I can tell you they will be in the areas that you've recently seen on the news that have been getting a lot of attention on the headlines. So please keep them in your thoughts and prayers. The three soldiers that recently died from a UAV attack were actually Army National Guard soldiers, which was inaccurately reported as reservists. So our folks will be essentially over there controlling them and in similar locations. In addition to the 34th Infantry Division headquarters being deployed, numerous other units are scheduled to mobilize in the next 18 months. And those are our finance detachment, the medical ambulance and acquisitions team, as well as the 148th Fighter Wing. All right, we've got a lot of upgrades, and, you know, the slide doesn't really do it any justice, but, you know, $2.5 billion in federal investment is coming into the Minnesota National Guard in the next 3 years. So 8 C-130Js, which are just a faster, better aircraft than the C-130Hs that we currently have at the 133rd. Newer equipment, longer range, all digital cockpits, and most importantly, I would say the C-130Hs are something that the Air Force no longer flies. So being concurrent, flying the same aircraft that the Air Force is very important, because that would make you a closure target if you're not flying the same equipment that our active counterparts are. So the selection for the fielding of the 8 C-130Js in Minnesota extends the flying mission for the 133rd Airlift Wing for the next 20 to 30 years, we believe. And along with those new aircraft will come additional training, upgraded hangars, maintenance, and other facilities that are needed for the new aircraft. We're still waiting to hear when that fielding will occur exactly and what the sequencing is, but we're expecting them within the next few years. Next, we've got 87 M1 Abrams main battle tanks. They will be fielded in the summer of 2025, and these tanks will be the newest tanks off the assembly line and will require additional crew training for our folks in the Minnesota National Guard. And then 138 M2 Bradley infantry fighting vehicles. These infantry fighting vehicles are tracked. They have a 25 millimeter main gun, and they are the main battle vehicle of the mechanized infantry. And we are currently receiving the M2A3 model from Fort Cavazos, formerly Fort Hood in Texas, and they're beginning to arrive in Minnesota in the coming months. And then 345 Joint Light Tactical Vehicles, or the JLTVs. That is a replacement for the Humvees, as I'm sure we've all heard of. And this new system provides a bulletproof structure along with the underbody protection. The JLTVs have been partially fielded, and Minnesota is just waiting on the last 80 to arrive. So 265 of them are currently up at Camp Ripley. And then 131 AMPVs, or Armored Multi-Purpose Vehicles, AMPVs. They're the replacement for the command vehicle tracks, also known as the M113s, and these new command vehicles allow command nodes to keep pace with the maneuver units out there and incorporate greater protection for the crew members. We expect this fielding to begin in the summer months of 2025. And then finally, 9 UH-60 Victor models, Black Hawk helicopters. So these are the updated Black Hawk helicopters comparable to the UH-60 Mike models that currently feature increased reliability, digital cockpits, improved communications equipment, and more. And two of those models arrived in Minnesota, and we're waiting on final decision for the rest of the fielding timelines. All right, jumping over to bonuses. So the enlistment incentives appropriation is $13.6 million shared with the state tuition assistance and several other programs. In 22, it was a partial year. We had 149 takers. FY, or state fiscal year 23, we had 835. And now in 24, we're at 465 for the partial year. It is netted around 1,449 reenlistments. And the other great thing about this is it takes our members past the 12 years where they can still get the bonus. So those bonus amounts are, for the three-year point, it's $4,500. The four-year point, $6,000. And then for a six-year reenlistment, it bumps up to $15,000. It's payable at the end of each year of the reenlistment period. So a member on a three-year burn bonus at the end of their first year will get paid one-third of that bonus. Now, our retention rates have continued to increase. However, that's not necessarily a great measure of how effective the reenlistment bonuses are. Some senior members, or I should say, sorry, some of our military members may reenlist whether Military National Guard or Minnesota National Guard as a bonus or not. It just might be a nice thank you to them and to their family. For others, the state bonus does provide that additional leverage to push them over the edge to get them to say yes to reenlist and incentivize their continuous service with the Minnesota National Guard. And then of note, most of the federal enlistment bonuses are not valid or offered after the 12-year point. So we think this is pretty special to keep people after that 12-year point. And in future slides, we'll talk about why that's a factor as well. So the latitude allowed in the state bonus program that we can offer the re-enlistment bonuses over 12 years is fantastic. Next slide. All right, I'll let you read through some of this with the recruiting and how we've done, and just talk about some of the highlight areas in there. So recruiting really is harder than we have made it look here in the state of Minnesota. One of the things that we've done is we've really tried hard to retain soldiers and airmen even more than recruiting here in the past. So I will also say that the services across the board, active and guard and reserve components, are truly approaching a manpower crisis across the country. And I'm sure you've heard about that, but it's real. And when you look at our numbers, you won't see it. But we're definitely starting to see the trends going in the wrong direction. So as you read the slides, you can see the Minnesota Army National Guard is doing very well, and they're above 107% at the time that we did this end of fiscal year. And that has dropped off currently, but they're still in solid territory. Now, the Army Guard relied heavily on increased retention numbers this year, so we're not exactly how long this is going to last or what the second order effects will be, but so far so good. Now, the Air National Guard, I will tell you, barely made 100%, and we tried very hard to get there. So we completely revamped our recruiting program in order to hit our minimum for picture day, which is at the end of the fiscal year, and we made it. We had some things going for us, one of which, unfortunately, was a system glitch with retiring people out. So we probably had a few people on the books that we otherwise wouldn't have gotten credit for. And then counterintuitive, we were actually able to transfer some folks from the unit up in Duluth with a very small population down here to the metro area to get them over 100% early. So currently both units are slightly below 100% and kind of holding there. And I'll tell you why that's important in a minute. So propensity to serve is only getting worse across the nation, and there's a lot of data to show why that is. But this matters because the services are lowering their standards to keep their numbers up and still failing to meet their goals, and that is true in the Air and Army Guard as well. So ultimately, if a component or unit in the National Guard does not meet their end strength, they may lose funding and mission. And this did happen in the Air National Guard last year. We were appropriated and authorized over 108,000 people in the Air National Guard last year, and Congress saw that we didn't make it, so they dropped us to 105,000 last year, which is significant. That's actually the number that's pretty equivalent to three air wings, which is a guard unit. And currently, the Air National Guard is sitting at 104,000 and not trending in the right direction. So they are saying instead of peanut butter spreading that loss rate across all of the 90 wings in the Air National Guard, that they may have to actually consider taking down entire wings or units. So I bring all this up because we jump into the impact from North Star Promise. The effects are unknown, but North Star Promise does directly compete for the same young adults that we are trying to recruit, and making our school benefits less of a recruiting tool for the Minnesota Air and Army National Guard. And then the reason the 12-year bonus was important is we don't know what the impact from the blended retirement system is yet, but it's a relatively new way of doing retirements where you contribute more to your own retirements, but you essentially are vested after a couple of years. So after a 3-year or a 6-year enlistment, our Thrift Savings Plan, or TSP, is essentially a 401k with matching contributions. You can walk with that. So there's no longer any sort of golden handcuffs that we used to have. And then there is certainly an impact from the military health system, otherwise known as Genesis, that you may have heard of. So this system, when our folks go to MEPS where they get screened to enter service, it can actually look back at all of their digital medical records for their entire life. And it's creating a lot of challenges based on, you know, a lot of the prescription medications that our youth are under, or if their parents got a divorce when they were young, if they had any sort of mental health issues at all, it is flagging them, and they're going into either a waiver process or disqualification process. And as they wait for that, a lot of times they're walking away from service to find other things that they can go out and do. So those are some of our challenges. Slide. All right, we'll go through this quick, but there are three programs that were developed here, and then six construction progress or projects that I'd like to keep you updated on in various stages, and we'll go into depth on them in the following slides. Next. All right, the cyber coordination cell, or the C3, they have completed all of their hiring of three positions back in December of 23. And the C3 had 49 external engagements with federal and state partners since it was stood up in October of 23. Those federal and state partners include the FBI, DHS, CISA, DHS, INA, the Minnesota Fusion Center, the BCA, HSEM, MINT, Secretary of State, the Guard Bureau, Metro State University, and then sister National Guard states such as North Carolina, Wisconsin, Illinois, Pennsylvania, and Virginia. So the cyber response kits allow response within hours versus a response that would normally take more than a week, just having those in the state. And those cyber response kits include individual workstations, servers, software, battery backups, and more. And it was noted that federal cyber response kits would normally take 12 to 15 days to obtain, since they aren't located regionally or as co-use assets. So that time frame is just to get the equipment here and does not include the time needed to configure and maintain those systems. So we're in the process of developing a military cyber symposium for September of 24. Slide. All right, and then we've got the H2F, which is the Holistic Health and Fitness. So that was established in the 23 legislative session, and all of that team has been hired out with five employees authorized by legislation. And the state is committed to this program, and it has actually prompted some additional federal funding for the temporary federal positions throughout the year. So 71,022, 223, and 276 in federal fiscal year 24. So that H2F team will conduct four comprehensive service member fitness courses, two holistic health and fitness courses, and a lot of nutrition fundamental courses by August of 30. And then eventually, when the Army Combat Fitness facility is located at Arden Hills, that's where we'll do the fitness test as well. And, you know, this is really helping us out to maintain some of those soldiers that would not otherwise be eligible for reenlistment. So it's helping us a lot with not only quality of life, but retaining our highly trained soldiers and airmen in the Minnesota National Guard. Slide. All right, and then our domestic operations communications capabilities. So we've been modernizing there and investing in various capabilities. So we've got 70 modernized and encrypted 800 megahertz radios to the tune of $336,000. And then two of the CRDs, the Compact Rapid Deployable Communication Suites. You can see that kind of in the foreground in front of that vehicle. That is the CRD kit. And then in the background is a remote communications platform that we're in the process of rebuilding. So as you know, the 800 megahertz radios, they tie into the state's armor system. So we're able to communicate across various agencies throughout the state of Minnesota on those. And then the CRDs, they provide satellite and then 4G and 5G cellular backups for internet access or where cellular networks are either not accessible or do not exist. And a good example of that is up in northern Minnesota for sure, or if there's any sort of issues with our networks. And then they have recently added a Starlink system into that as well, which they can plug right into those. And it is a very low cost that provides tremendous bandwidth that works anywhere and has extremely fast setup and takedown capability. The RCP, we're maintaining that, but it is fairly old, so we're in the process of refurbishing that right now. Next slide. All right, the Army Combat Fitness Test Fieldhouse. Designer selection is at the State Designer Selection Board right now, and we anticipate an A&E firm to be selected in April and then contracted in May of 24. Design should be complete in 2025, May of 2025, and then open the bid up in July. Construction should take about 18 months. Expect that to open up December of 26, and it will be built in Arden Hills to the tune of $17.6 million from the 23 legislative session. All right, and then the capital improvements through bonding. So Rosemont is in the construction phase and started in approximately January of 24. Marshall, also in the construction phase, started approximately January 24. And then Moorhead and Fergus Falls are substantially complete and should be opening soon. And then jumping down to the Military and Veterans Museum, we've got $32.75 million invested. We'll be requesting an extension on 2020 bonding to the tune of $13 million. The museum is currently in the design phase and anticipate advertising the project in March of 24. Construction should occur from May of 24 through November of 25 as an estimate, and then hoping to have that opened up Memorial Day of 2026. All right, and then really the implementation next steps is really just continuing to monitor the construction progress of the ACFT and the Minnesota Military and Veterans Museum, expanding the impact of the H2F and seeking additional federal funding, and then continue collaboration of the C3 with other state, federal, and local agencies. DMA will seek a buy-in extension for 1 year to the 2020 funding for the Military Veteran Museum and the Marshall Readiness Center. Slide. So, in conclusion, I want to thank you for your time, Mr. Chair and the board, and for your attention and support of the Minnesota National Guard and the Department of Military Affairs. You truly make a difference in the lives of our soldiers and airmen and their families, and you are directly contributing to our national defense. Pending any questions, that concludes my update today.
Thank you, General Blomquist. Are there any questions? Representative Waynes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, General Blomquist and Mr. Kerr. I think this is a great report. Obviously, there's a couple of things we need to work on, or you need to work on, and maybe we can assist, especially with the 148th. That's probably maybe the big one ticket item to fix. But I had a question in regards, well, actually a compliment in regards to recruiting, especially on the Army side. Minnesota's been known to just be an overproducer and taking up the slack for a lot of other states. In regards to what you could tell me maybe about the pending deployment for the 34th Infantry Division, the Red Bulls, were you able to organically outfit with all the capabilities and skill sets from the Minnesota National Guard, like 95%, 98%? I just recall from our historic deployment during OIF about 12 years ago, we were able to reach that state and inherently do it without breaking other units or requesting a lot of other skill sets.
As far as I know, sir, and I'll let Mr. Kerr correct me to 100%, but I think that they have met all of that within their own ranks, and they're currently getting the training that they require. There's always a few onesie-twosie folks, right, that a lot of times you'll reclama from outside of your unit due to very last-minute medical or personal issues, but I'll kick it over to Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Kerr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. Mr. Chair, Representative Beans, they were able to fill nearly all of the positions. They did have about 80 in-theater extensions that they gladly accepted from the previous rotation. I think there may have been 10 individuals that came from a nationwide call, but for the vast majority of the positions that were required, the division was able to fill them internally without breaking other Minnesota units.
And one follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thank you, gentlemen. That's a great news story. A lot of other units cannot do that. A lot of other organizations struggle with doing that. And Minnesota has been, I think, I would say glide path, but that's sort of an air term. But to really be able to perform whenever they're called upon by the nation and or by the governor. Just one other question, and that has to do with the M1s. That you mentioned. That's my ride from back in the day. I love the Abrams main battle tank, 70 tons of rolled homogeneous steel, just ready to do whatever mission they're given. You had mentioned that these are, I think, brand spanking new. They're coming off the assembly line. And it's the M1, is it M1A2? What blocks? Could you give me a little bit more? I'm just excited, and I'd like to go see them sometime.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beans there, M1A2 SEP V4s. Presumably the last SEP V4s that are going to be contracted, the Army's going to redesign the tank and call the new one something else. But they are coming off the Lima tank plant assembly line and rolling into Minnesota directly from the factory. So,
and Mr. Chair,
we'll be very excited. We'll let you know.
I'd just like to go on record saying that the M1 main battle tank is the best main battle tank in the world, bar none, hands down. Thank you much.
Thank you, Colonel Weins. Mr. Kerr, I think we're going to continue. Do you have anything to add?
Mr. Chair, no, thank you. I'll stay here because I'm going to get a bunch of help, or I'm going to be providing help, I guess, to some of your committee members to introduce some of the agency's bills today.
Okay, thank you. And thank you again, General Blomquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So next we're going to have several bills coming up. Representative Norris, if you'd like to present House File 3454, please.
You take this one.
Representative Norris, if you'd identify yourself for the record and then proceed with introducing the bill, please.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Matt Norris, representing the Blaine and Lexington area here in the Minnesota House, and I'd like to move House File 3454.
Okay. House File 3454 has been introduced, and if you would like to explain the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So one of the favorite doors that I get to knock when I'm going around my district is actually a military recruiter. And I always enjoy the opportunity to stop by and chat with him and thank him for his service and his work, but also, you know, talk to him about what's the environment looking like? What are some of the challenges? Is it, you know, is he, you know, having a good success rate recruiting? Are there some headwinds that they're facing? And just really enjoy the opportunity to kind of pick his brain and hear, you know, what does the pipeline look like to make sure that we can maintain the level of military readiness that we need for our state and our nation. And so when this bill came along, I was really excited and it leapt at the opportunity to carry it because it creates a referral bonus program. And I think about this as just one additional tool that we can put in my constituents' toolbox and the toolbox of our Minnesota National Guard to make sure that we do hit those enlistment goals that we're aiming for. I know we just heard a little bit about some of the challenges we're facing there, but I think this is one bill that we can bring forward to help give them a little bit of an extra boost to meet those goals and maintain the readiness that we need. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Mr. Kerr to talk a little bit more about the bill.
Mr. Kerr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So this is a very important tool that we think the Adjutant General may need added to the toolbox. As we're looking at this very difficult recruiting environment across the nation, a number of states have implemented a similar program. And what this basically does is it pays a bonus to someone that refers someone who enlists. And that's an authority that the Adjutant General does not currently have, but one that has really come up numerous times as being a potential real benefit for our overall recruiting program by being able to incentivize folks who are currently serving to provide leads that will enlist. And though the Adjutant General is not 100% decided that he wants to do this, what we identified as we were doing the research on this is that, well, you don't currently have the authority to anyway. So if you think you want to go there, the first thing we need to do is get the authority to do so. And the presumption would be that this would be funded from the enlistment incentives appropriation from that existing pool of resources. So there's no fiscal note attached to this thing because all it is authority at this point to operate within the context of the funding that's already provided by the legislature.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Kerr. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was still a young lad when the United States Army had their referral bonus program many years ago. And so when I joined, I did not have the opportunity to refer anyone. There wasn't a little line at the bottom there. From my understanding, the Army got rid of this referral bonus program due to some serious fraud involved in it. And so I would hope that if we in the Minnesota National Guard begin utilizing this as a tool to increase our recruitment, that you would at least provide a list, provide some form of extra eyes on to the legislature so we know who, you know, if there's an individual who's received, you know, 15 referrals and you're like, is this person the most popular person in school? Or is this an actual recruiter? Or is there a limit to how many referral bonuses you can receive as a human being? This is something that, whereas it could be a really awesome tool to help you build the house, it could also result in the house turning, you know, burning up. And this could be a real black eye for the U.S. or for the Minnesota National Guard. So I hope that as this moves forward, Representative Norris, you'll look at putting some guardrails in it with the legislature or with anyone in particular, just so we can make sure that we're not reinventing a wheel that's going to go flat on us like it did 15 years ago. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Mr. Kerr, would you like to comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Olson. Yeah, very good point. And that was called the GRAP program, the Guard Recruit Assistance Program at the national level. And there were some real problems with the GRAP program and how it was implemented. The chain of command relied very heavily on a contractor to provide oversight, which in hindsight, proved to be completely inappropriate. And your concerns are very deeply shared, which is the biggest reason we haven't been pushing this harder, was the concern over the previous experience with that. But we certainly would be amenable to an amendment that would require legislative reporting should the program be put into effect. Obviously, we would put some pretty serious guardrails inside our program, but we would not object at all to having a legislative reporting requirement added. And I think that would have to happen here because I don't think this is going anywhere else. But it could certainly be laid on the table. We could work that amendment and then bring it back up at some future date, Mr. Chair.
Yes, if you would work with Representative Norris, Mr. Kerr, I think
absolutely.
That's a good idea. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quick on that note also, is there a mechanism to have the department report to the legislature when something is implemented, not just reporting as it's going on, but when it's implemented, if we could maybe add something like that as well?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bliss would be happy to do that as well. We can roll that into the same device.
Good. So we have some additional work to do on this bill. The bill is then laid over, and we'll bring it up again once we get the adjusted wording in it. Good. Thank you, Representative Norris, Mr. Kerr. Next bill on the agenda is House File 3470, Representative Clardy. And as Representative Clardy is coming up, I'd just like to mention this summer I was at a meeting with chairs of veterans committees from across the United States, and recruitment and retention came up. And for those of you who are with military backgrounds, this was a big issue in most states. And they like for so many things that happened in Minnesota, they were just unable to understand how we did so well when they struggle and keep pouring money into things and can't find recruits to come into the service. So, I think that speaks well of the Guard and their recruiting ability. Representative Clardy, if you would introduce yourself and then introduce House File 3470, please.
Great. I am Representative Mary Frances Clardy from House District 53A. And I'd like to move that House File 3470 is reviewed.
Yes, and that 3470 will be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Representative Clardy, if you'd introduce the bill, please.
Great, thank you. So the purpose of this bill is to modify the definition of the criminal justice agencies, amending Minnesota Statute 2022, Section 1302, Subdivision 3A, to include the Minnesota National Guard. So it will read that the criminal justice agency means all state local prosecution authorities, all state local law enforcement agencies, the Sentencing Guideline Commission, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, the Department of Correction, the Minnesota National Guard, and all probationary office who are not judiciary. So the purpose of this is to clarify that the Minnesota National Guard's ability to receive law enforcement and investigatory data from the civilian law enforcement agencies for administrative or disciplinary processes under the Code of Military Justice. So if local authorities decline to prosecute under the primary jurisdiction, so basically including the National Guard in the definition of criminal justice agencies.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. And I assume, Mr. Slade, that's why you're here with us today.
That is one of them, yes.
And if you would introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yes, my name is Nicholas Slade. I am an assistant deputy counsel for Department of Military Affairs.
All right. Would you like to comment on the bill, Mr. Slade?
The main push, and this is, I was one of the main drivers in getting this, is as part of the Minnesota National Guard, we have a much greater need. We are actually a criminal jurisdiction. We do have our own criminal jurisdiction for prosecution. But we also have a much greater need for access to data and investigative information from other agencies. And so getting a number of these changes in this bill and a couple others are really driven by our need for greater access to information for our people.
Good, thank you. Mr. Kerr, any comments at all?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what this really gets to is, as Representative Hardy mentioned, in cases where we have secondary jurisdiction, where a particular or a potential crime has been committed and a local prosecutorial entity reviews and decides they're not going to move forward, being able to provide the full investigatory packet to us so that we can exercise secondary jurisdiction for purely military matters in particular, that's like the main reason that we brought this forward, is it clarifies for those other law enforcement entities that they can indeed release those investigatory results, and it prevents us from having to do a second investigation of the same offense using our own resources. And additionally, as Mr. Slade mentioned, some of the other DOD investigations, there's a lot more background investigation being done by the DOD in the current era, particularly looking for affiliation with extremist organizations among our military members. And this clarifies that other law enforcement entities can share that information with us as a law enforcement activity rather than being constrained by the Data Practices Act.
Good, thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Weens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Kerr, Mr. Slade, Representative Clardy. In my understanding, so this is requesting a change from how we currently operate. If there are, let's say, traditional, say, guardsmen or that are not on in a duty status or they are not on a military facility that are looked at by a different law enforcement agency or jurisdiction, this particular act looks at whether the National Guard would like to pursue a legal case against somebody in those particular, because I just recall this from my time at being a commander and having these things happen, and we always let it to that, whatever, if they're not in duty status, not on a military facility, you let the civilian courts do it. So this, I think, is a change, and obviously the impetus is one of the things you talked about as far as terrorism. But it could be other acts, Mr. Chair. If they could just clarify,
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Slade, or Mr. Kerr,
Mr. Chair, Representative Beans. Actually, it's not a change in the way we're doing business. The authority that we have to receive that information and our authority, the jurisdictional aspect of that, is actually covered elsewhere in statute, in Minnesota Statute 192A, that does clarify when we have the authority to take action against individuals. This is clarification for the law enforcement agencies so that they better understand that they are able to release the information to us as a law enforcement agency. So we don't have to make the secondary argument to go to them and say, hey, look, 192A says that we can do this, so you need to give us the information. They could answer. 192A may say you can do that, but it doesn't say I can give you the information. This clarifies that they can give us the information as a law enforcement agency, rather than as a non-law enforcement agency. So really, we're not changing anything from a jurisdiction perspective. This is merely clarifying for law enforcement agencies that they won't be violating the Data Practices Act if they share the information with us.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Kerr, Senator Weens, is that, yes, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just do have a question as well.
Yes, please.
Just out of curiosity, with or without this, do you ever struggle having other agencies give you that information? They just say, we're not going to give it to you? Or is it pretty open? Or how much antagonism is there between the groups?
Yeah, Mr. Slade.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ma'am, yes, we do. That's one of the main reasons that I had asked for these changes is, just for an example, one of the other requirements that we regularly have to do is suicide investigations, and getting the autopsy report from the medical examiner, which is not a law enforcement agency, but we've had a number of times where we've had difficulties getting those information without going through a whole long other process again. So really trying to clarify our need for data on anybody who's attached to us is really what this is about. So yeah, yes, ma'am, we do have had a number of problems.
Thank you. One more quick follow-up, if yes. I could, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So question to clarify for me. So this is not telling other law enforcement agencies they have to give you the data, but it's just clarifying that they are able to without them having to feel uncomfortable or something.
Mr. Smith.
Correct?
Yes. Thank you. Yes, really, as Mr. Kerr pointed out, really what it's doing is saying that while we have the authority, they can treat us as they can recognize us as a criminal justice agency, so that just as they could turn it over to police officers if they were doing an investigation, they can turn it over to us. That's really the intent, is to clarify that we have the same standard.
Thank you. Thank you, okay. Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions? Representative Clardy, do you have anything additional that you'd like to add?
Just that the clarification is a purpose, so law enforcement agencies can share data.
Good. Thank you. Representative Clardy renews her motion that House File 3470 be recommended to be referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Good. Okay, Representative Clardy, your bill is on the way to its Judiciary Committee. Thank you. Next, we have a bill from Representative Coulter, House File 3473. If you would introduce yourself and then the bill, Representative Coulter. Coulter.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excuse me. Apologies for finishing off the cold that my kid brought home from preschool. I'm Representative Nathan Coulter. I serve District 51B, which basically includes the eastern half of the city of Bloomington in the Minnesota House of Representatives. And I will move House File 3473. I believe it is also on its way to Judiciary.
That is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is another DMA agency bill, and we'll have the experts here who can and speak to it a little more specifically. The bulk of the language of the bill is really just moving some language from 192.67 into a different section of statute, 192.25. The biggest change in the bill would be on line 2.12, and this just basically expands the kinds of information that would be available from the state to the state judge advocate for the purpose of investigation under the Minnesota Code of Military Justice beyond what is currently available that they are able to access in certain instances where local law enforcement may either decline to prosecute or found nothing to prosecute. But there may be further violations under the state code of military justice that the judge advocate may wish to look into. So that's really the extent of the bill, and happy to answer questions, but more likely I will be happy to send the questions to these folks.
Yes, and thank you, Representative Coulter. Mr. Slade or Mr. Kerr, if you'd like to comment on the bill.
Sure. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, and thank you, Representative, for carrying this for us. And we do think there's probably going to be an amendment when this goes to the next committee, because they pointed out some very appropriate changes that we think we're going to accept in the motion forward. But this is very closely related to the previous bill, and we're taking the opportunity to move that piece of statute from one place to another inside this bill as well, because that also aligns better with regard to how the law is structured. And with that, I guess any questions that
Thank you,
may
Mr.
have.
Kerr. Are there any questions at all? Good. Seeing none, Representative Coulter, do you have any final comments on this?
Just quickly, Mr. Chair, to the point that Mr. Kerr made, the language that he was referring to is what's on lines 1.16 through 1.22. I it would be more appropriate to discuss in an amendment in judiciary, but just so members of this committee are aware, it really just sort of revolves around some language that my guess is has probably been in statute for a while and is maybe just a little bit outdated. One example I would point to is it references and says when any criminal offense is committed by any officer, et cetera, does that mean they've been charged, convicted, et cetera? So it's just kind of some what we think some imprecise language that, could probably do with a refresh. But that'll, like I said, I think the better place for that is in the Judiciary Committee, but just wanted to clarify for members what Mr. Kerr was referring to there. Beyond that, would ask for your vote to move it on. Yeah.
Good. Thank you, Representative Coulter. Representative Coulter renews his motion that House File 3473 be recommended to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. The motion prevails, so the bill is on its way to the Judiciary. Thank you. Our next presenter is Representative Hudela, who has House File 3869, and if you also would introduce yourself and the bill, Representative Hudela. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Shane Hudela, I'd like to move House File 3869.
Okay. Would you like to explain the bill, Representative Hudela?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Super easy bill, just a technical fix on our Adjutant General's authority as it pertains to construction off of Camp Ripley and leasing or renting armory facilities. Right now, there's been traditionally some statutory confusion on whether or not the Adjutant General has the authority to enter or work lease options and construction off of Camp Ripley. So this bill just clarifies that, yes, he does.
Good. Are there any questions? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is for Mr. Kerr. So imagine you rent the facility at Fairmont because you have a major wedding, huge, lots of people going to be there, right? Looking on the back page when it says, number one, the payment of those, that money that is received in order to rent out that drill hall, which I think is a wonderful thing that should be available to the public. So it's to be used to pay increased utilities maintenance. Then after that's all paid for, operating and maintenance or repair costs for the building in which is rented. And then lastly, it goes to maintenance and improvement of buildings or other facilities at Camp Ripley. Now my question is, from my understanding, we have a lot more facilities and buildings just rather than just outside of Camp Ripley. Can you kind of explain the money trail? How does that go and how do we allocate it? Because does all that money just basically end up at the facilities usage for maintenance anyways? How much of it actually would go to Camp Ripley and should it just say some fund for general maintenance for the Army National Guard?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Olson, yeah, that's a good question. It's complex, of course. In existing law, we actually have things called armory funds. So, and typically, when a facility is rented, the proceeds of that rental after paying the necessary overhead costs do stay in that armory fund, and they generally are only spent in that armory for improvements to that facility. We do have circumstances, though, on occasion, for example, when the federal government fails to pass a budget until March, and there are shortfalls in something called the 131 account, where the state pays utilities up front and is reimbursed by the feds. Well, if they run out of money for the reimbursement, we have to find a way to pay the utilities. Our past practice has been to try to keep those armory funds isolated and use the money in the armory funds only for those facilities. But we have a couple of armories that have very substantial armory funds, and we have in the past taken action to centralize some of that funding into this type of an account. So generally speaking, the proceeds from a rental stay in the armory in which the rental occurs. What we're really trying to get at here is we have facilities that are not armories that are available for rental and trying to make sure that we have the appropriate authority to rent those facilities. And in particular, our field maintenance shops and our Army Aviation Support Facilities are 100% federally funded and not technically armories. And so we found that we had armory rentals going on in non-armories, and we wanted to clean up the authority to ensure that we had that clarified. The other piece that's a little bit weird here is, in statute, the authority to rent armories doesn't technically say the Adjutant General rents the armories. It says the Armory Board. Now, there's inference there because the Adjutant General appoints the Armory Board, but there's no direct authority for the Adjutant General to rent facilities other than at Camp Ripley, which we thought was interesting. Well, now with our enhanced presence at both AHATS, the Arden Hills Army Training Site, which is kind of like Camp Ripley, but not really, and then the two flying wings and our Army Aviation Support Facilities in St. Cloud and St. Paul, we kind of felt this was a good place to try to clean that language up to ensure that we had properly captured the intent for the Adjutant General's authority, leaving the opportunity in there in the event that we have to centralize those armory funds, though we're quite anathema to do that because it obviously it doesn't incentivize a local armory team to try to enhance the rentals of their armory if we're taking the money away from them for doing that. So the financial incentive of being able to use the proceeds back in that local armory are fairly high, and that's how we do business today. And this is really just trying to clean up that additional authority.
Thank you for navigating us through the weeds, Mr. Kerr.
Thank you, man.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, I renew the motion that House File 3869 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And now, that's the only one you have, Representative Udella, I think, yeah, today. Representative Olson, this is 3870, is that the Representative Olson, if you would identify yourself and then House File 3870.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Bjorn Olson from District 22A. I have the honor of asking for this bill to be, I think we're laying it over on the table here. So, House File 3870 is basically, it talks about renting, leasing, talks about selling, acquiring new land, and building new armories. So it cleans up some of the language, clarifies some of the abilities of the Adjutant General and this armory board that we just finished talking about. Talks about how we can go about selling an old or potentially unused armory. Talks about how we can go about accumulating or gaining some land in order to build a new one. For example, if a city would like to have an armory, so they have one and it's old and it needs to be refurbished, and they could potentially say, we've got this excellent choice piece of land right here, we would like to give it to the Minnesota in order for the production of an armory as an incentive for a city. So that's another opportunity that you could have within this bill.
But Mr. Kerr, if you would like to add anything.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so as Representative Olson stated, we're really looking at cleaning up language. So there is an entity called the Minnesota State Armory Building Commission. It's ensconced in Minnesota Statute 193, very wisely established by the legislature back in, the 1950s, that provides bonding authority to the Adjutant General and the rest of the corporation. To the extent of $15 million right now. And as part of that, we have to undergo periodic audits. And our external auditor came back and said, hey, there may be some concerns that the law currently doesn't give you the authority to pay your bills, and it's kind of important that you be able to do that. Obviously, that's inferred. But this is another one of those situations where we felt adding that language was important at this time. And the other thing that we were trying to do gets to being able to provide. So the way the statute lays out right now, when the Adjutant General decides to divest of an armory, he has to get an appraisal of fair market value and offer it for sale to the local community for that fair market value. Either the city or the county have first dibs, and if they don't want to take it, then we can sell it in a traditional fashion. What we've run into is often when we're building an armory, we will go to a city and say, we want you to donate the land as part of your contribution to this and run the utilities to it. That didn't used to be a big deal, but today, 15-acre plot with utilities run to it can run into many millions of dollars. And so the contribution we're requesting from a city to replace their armory may be rather high. And when all is said and done and we get ready to divest of their old armory, we have to look at them and say, hey, thanks for giving us that $8 million worth of land and utilities. Now we want you to pay fair market value for the old armory. And this language would allow us to consider contributions made by the city as part of the monetary value proposition in selling the armory to that city. We think, looking at it, that that was a very fair way to go. We also have some circumstances where we believe in Greater Minnesota, we're probably going to be divesting of properties in rather small population counties that probably will not have the tax base to be able to pay fair market value, but may indeed be the best and proper use of that facility if they're interested in acquiring it. And this would give the Adjutant General a certain amount of discretion in the to take into account the financial straits of the local community before trying to recoup the people of Minnesota's investment from that building. And we do think that there are different circumstances that exist based on where you are, and that's why we didn't think universally it would be a good approach. But we think giving the Adjutant General some ability to do a value judgment in those cases would be helpful.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Curran. And I understand you're going to be working on possibly changing the bill somewhat. Is that correct?
I don't know this one, Mr. Chair. This one, I think, is...
Okay. Well, yeah, from what I understand is we probably are going to be moving the bill next week.
Okay.
And then we'll lay it over. So the bill is laid over for today until it comes up again next week.
Mr. Chair, that might be 1371, or excuse me, 3871.
Is it 3871?
No, I'm wrong.
That one is moving today.
No, the 3871 is moving today.
Got it.
Okay. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question on page 6, subdivision 3, the disposition of unsuitable armory sites and buildings. The change there says that currently the money goes into the general fund of the state of Minnesota, and we're going to be moving it to the Department of Military Affairs or Military State Armory Building Commission. Currently, when it goes into the general fund, is it just an automatic transfer over to the Department of Military Affairs, or is this going to be a budget impact that we need to worry about? For fiscal note or anything?
Mr. Chair and Representative Bliss, to my knowledge, we have not divested of a property using this subdivision of authority, specifically because there's another place that if we divest, the money doesn't go to MMB, it goes to the maintenance appropriation. And I almost need to pull that up and take a look at that. But the key that we were making, I don't think there's going to be any change.
Okay.
So the other divestiture authority does not require us to provide the money to MMB, and so the Adjutant General, during my tenure as the Executive Director when we divested, always put that money back into the maintenance appropriation or the Minnesota State Armory Building Commission, depending on whether the MSABC was the original builder of the armory. Typically, we put the money back into MSABC. The statute actually allows us to keep the money longer if it's at MSABC than if it's in the maintenance appropriation. But this would be just cleaning that up and eliminating the MMB option from this one.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, then House File 3870 is laid over until... it is laid over. Okay, until next week. And Representative Olson, you also have House File 3871. If you'd like to introduce that bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 3871. And so this, currently the law in the state of Minnesota is that if you have an unauthorized presence on Camp Ripley, whether it's within any buildings or, you know, it's a large establishment, there are probably some gaps in the lines that you could find yourself there unallowed, if that's a real word. what this would do is this would expand it to all military National Guard facilities within the state of Minnesota. So an example, when I was in command, now I'm a reservist, so I'm not a National Guard member, which means I don't ever get bonuses, which is really sad for me. Missed out on quite a bit. But regardless, when I was in command, I had 60 semi-trucks and 60 trailers that had 7,500 gallons of petroleum. They were in a lot. Yeah, there was a barbed wire fence, but I think people can find their way around that. I was signed for nearly $20 million worth of government property. That wasn't at Camp Ripley. That would be a problem if someone were to find themselves an unauthorized presence in that area. And so this just broadens the language, ensures that our military assets are protected, and that we can cover the entirety of the Minnesota National Guard.
Okay. Mr. Kerr?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but nothing yet.
Good. Okay. Are there any questions? Okay, seeing none, Representative Olson renews his motion at House File 3871 be recommended to be referred to the Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No? Okay, House File 3871 is on its way. The last bill we have today is Representative Elkins' bill. If you would introduce yourself and the bill, Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to move to advance this bill to the Committee on State and Local Government.
Okay.
This one is pretty straightforward. It's a one-paragraph bill. Under current law, counties have permissive authority to defray funding for Memorial Day observations, and all this bill would do is to give them the similar discretionary authority to also cover expenses for Veterans Day observances as well. And I have with me Christy Janigo. Christy is the legislative chair for the American Legion in Minnesota, and she will explain why this is a really cool bill.
Okay. Dr. Janigo, would you introduce yourself and
Yes,
proceed with the testimony.
Greetings, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Dr. Christy Janigo, and Representative Elkins, thank you for introducing this bill today. This bill is important to both of the statewide veterans advocacy organizations I represent, the American Legion Department of Minnesota and the Minnesota Association of County Veterans Service Officers. For my day job, I'm an assistant county veterans service officer, and I'm joined here today by MACVSO Executive Director John Baker, American Legion staff Tim, who has the camera behind me, and then one of our Legionnaires, Andrew Peters. Almost 20 years ago, I was a 92 whiskey or a water treatment specialist in the North Dakota Army National Guard from 2000 to 2006, in which they entrusted a teenager with a multi-million dollar piece of equipment. And when I was a young girl growing up in rural North Dakota, I had attended Memorial Day and Veterans Day observances with my granddad, who served in the Army in Okinawa in World War II. I learned respect for the flag and patriotism from a young age through the Honor Guard rituals and the gun salutes on these holidays. I'll never forget the image of our senior veterans, including my granddad, people who have bravely defended their country from tyranny and attacks overseas, whose salutes to the red, white, and blue had become unsteady and rather shaky with age and declining health, but who were still the embodiment of sacrifice, pride, strength, patriotism, and faith, the best attributes of America. To me, they were and remain heroes. This bill will not move mountains, but it will mean a lot for local communities across Minnesota. It will maintain the rich tradition of honoring our veterans, and it will impact the young girls and boys like it did for me. We veterans do fear that the public forgets about our sacrifices and does not understand our issues. Having these observances can really help to educate the public, and we do need that education to continue. This bill allows for counties to appropriate $300 for Veterans Day observances the same way the state law already allows us funding for Memorial Day. This bill does not mandate for counties to fund this, but it does make it an option. County Veterans Service Officers like our Association President Josh Benega of Lacaparral County are usually the agents who administer this funding to congressionally chartered veterans service organizations like the Legion or the VFW. And our CVSOs are often the honored guests at these types of observances. It does serve to strengthen the relationship between veterans and county government, which can increase their chances of seeking out assistance through the federal VA, State Department of Veterans Affairs, or entities that can provide life-changing support to those who have served. So thanks again for hearing this important bill, which will mean so much to the veterans community. And with that, I would stand for any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Janigo. Are there any questions? No, seeing none. In the meantime, I'd like to have Mr. Baker come up and introduce himself, because we have a new position to help represent veterans in our counties. And if you'd introduce yourself, Mr. Baker, for the record.
Yeah, good morning or good afternoon, Mr. Chair, and thank you for asking me to come up. So my name is John Baker. I am the new executive director and the first executive director for the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. You all last year authorized some funding to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and I'm honored to have been hired in this position. So a little bit about myself. I'm retired United States Marine Corps. I think I'm the only Marine in the room. That's all right.
We won't hold that against you.
I'm also a lawyer, and I just retired as a full-time professor at St. Cloud State. Was retired for 28 days, and now I have this job. So I am extremely honored to do this. This gets me back doing this work again. The chair and I go way back, in 2008, I chaired the initiative to start veteran courts in Minnesota, and we have the first veteran court in Hennepin County, which Dr. Janigo runs as well, and done a lot of work with veteran courts. So I think you're going to see a lot of me coming back here working on those issues. I'm identifying so far in my job, I'm identifying where the gaps are. And where the gaps are with my about 165 county veteran service officers in the state, and how we can best serve them and how we can best serve our veterans. So I'm really excited and honored to be here for this job. I also want to say that our association does support this particular bill as well, as it has a direct impact on all 87 counties in the state. So. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Baker. Representative Bennett.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Question on the bill here. So I'm not sure which person. Great idea. I like this bill. Just wondering how many counties currently contribute to Memorial Day. Is this something that's common, not common? Do we know that information? And just throughout the state, kind of.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bennett, I don't have the data on that. I know that it is much more common in the rural areas. So in larger metro counties, there are many veteran service organizations, but in a rural community, there might be only one or two. Municipalities generally don't fund this sort of observance, so it truly is on the veteran service organizations to do it. And our smaller posts are the ones that are often struggling and can't afford to do this on their own without some type of assistance.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other questions at all? Is there anyone else who would like to testify to this bill? Seeing none, I move that House File 3677 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus. Okay, it's going to state gov. Okay. Seeing that we have to move it to state gov, all those in favor of moving this bill to state gov, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, the bill is on its way to state gov. Good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
Mr. Chair. State gov, would you like it to come back here?
Yeah, beg your pardon?
I said after it's been through state gov, would you like it to come back here?
Yes, please.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That essentially concludes our business, unless there's someone that has comments or would like to come up and say something. Representative Weens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of green jackets here, one of which is on the Commander's Task Force. It's the property tax relief for federally recognized veterans organizations looking for co-authors for that, so I'll have those here. And the last thing I would like to mention is just an invitation to the World War II Roundtable that's held monthly at the Minnesota History Center, so just a short walk from here. March 12th is the next event. We still have a handful of World War II vets that do the roundtable, and it's free, and parking's free. If it's an event night, you just tell them, hey, I'm here for the World War II roundtable, and it's free parking. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Any additional comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.